The average New Yorker uses a third less energy than the average American. We take the metro to work. We walk. Because we have collective infrastructure, we actually use a lot less carbon.
Welcome to Climate Curious.
We're coming to you live from TED Countdown,
which is TED's climate summit.
Now, we all know that TED is normally about sparking curiosity, ideas, even inspiration. But sometimes an issue requires more than that, and climate change is just that issue. So TED Countdown is all about impact. It's all about action.
Right, and we've had an amazing opportunity to speak with some of the world leaders in the climate movement. So this season of the podcast is going to be intense, and it's going to be amazing.
There are going to be some moments of silence, right, some moments of awe, definitely some laughter and some unexpected climate confessions.
Some things that you've definitely never heard before. It's a good season. It's a good season.
So let's get started. So we talk a lot about cities here on Climate Curious.
We do.
That's our place, right? You and me.
Yeah, that's our juice, right? Like that's our special sauce, cities.
Cities. So I'm like super excited for our guest today.
Okay.
And I am not going to introduce him, but I'm going to let him introduce himself. But today we're joined by Vishaan Chakrabarty, mm-hmm. Who is speaking here at TED Countdown. Will you tell us in a couple of sentences who you are?
Sure. I'm an architect based in New York. I'm also an author. I write a lot about cities. I was born in Calcutta. Just have cities running through my bloodstream, I think.
Yeah, you're in good company here.
And the funny thing is, you know, I started thinking and writing about cities when, like, no one talked about cities. Like, cities were the last thing anyone talked about. And now, it's great that it's such a hot topic because it's a really critical part of the climate conversation.
What do you think has changed?
Well, a number of things changed. I mean, you know, crime in cities went down, and there's a lot of controversy around why crime in cities went down, obviously, yeah. Like a lot of police tactics and things that we could talk about. But I also just think that, it's interesting, like the movies and television series and things changed. All of a sudden, you started seeing shows, like even when Seinfeld first came out, like,
iconic.
You know, there's just kind of this curiosity about places like New York. And I think also, I do think we have a younger generation that's very, very concerned about the climate. And, you know, if you don't want to spend your day driving around in a car and you want to have a more sort of communal experience, cities are a really good way to be able to do that. One of the things I love about cities is that it's both community, but it's also millions of people mm-hmm. at scale mm. in a city, in a big city. That can change the world.
So the question I have is, and forgive my ignorance here, I'm not sure that I understand what the link between cities and climate change is. Apart from, so in my mind, I think carbon emissions, right? Like obviously more of those come from cities. But when I think of cities, I think of like, especially when I think of architecture, I think of like building buildings and keeping sound out of spaces and making like, doing things to make life easier for people as opposed to doing things to benefit the climate. So what's the link there for you?
Sure. Well, I mean, no, it's a great question. It starts with the fact that somewhere around 2007, mm-hmm. more of humanity started to live in urban areas than rural areas. So
was that only in 2007?
Yeah. So, so there's kind of a seismic shift that's taken place
right.
as people have been moving back to cities. A lot of this also has to do with the economy, that with the technological boom. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. With technology, there was always this idea, and we tested this during the pandemic, that like people would just go live anywhere and you wouldn't need to actually have what
right.
economists call agglomeration economies of people getting together and agglomerating.
What a great word.
That's such a nice just made that agglomerate. I just totally made that, right? You know, I think actually the pandemic proved to us how much we miss each other and
right.
that people really need social interaction. And like, I have like 30 people in my architecture firm and mm-hmm. we need to sit and draw together and look at models together. And so not everything can be done over Zoom, you know?
Yeah.
And so So you have lots of people gravitating towards that lifestyle. And so the thing that people often miss in the connection between cities and climate change is like we use this word green, right? Mm-hmm. And so people think that like things that are green are good for the planet and things that are not green are not good for the planet. So
that's true. You know,
so we think, well, I can live in a suburban house and I can see green from my window. I can see a tree or grass. The problem is that suburban house, right, is incredibly bad for the environment.
Right.
Right. Because if people have to drive back and forth, the heating and cooling of a suburban home as opposed to a flat in the right. city, all the ways in which suburbia depletes land, even if you electrify everything, sprawl, which is what we call like suburban growth, eats away land and leads to all sorts of other climate problems.
Right.
So then, all right, so what role do cities play? Like just take the United States, for instance, mm-hmm. one of the largest carbon emitters in the world. I live in New York. So the average New Yorker.
You're the worst.
Right? but that's actually what I'm going to challenge you on, Ben. Because the average New Yorker uses a third less energy than the average American.
Oh, really?
Because we take the metro to work. We walk.
Right.
We live in apartments that heat and cool each other. It's not because we're angels. Believe me, New Yorkers are far from angels. Right. It's just the lifestyle is more of a collective lifestyle. And because we have collective infrastructure, we actually use a lot less carbon.
Right.
Now, cities are still a hot mess. They use way more emissions than they should or produce much more carbon than they should. They're heat islands. So there's a lot to do in cities. Like we need to green our cities, for instance. Mm-hmm. You know, the flooding and things that are taking place in cities, we need more just like porous surface that absorbs water.
Right.
And a lot of us are fighting to electrify the grid with clean energy, right? And so there's a lot of things we need to do.
So let's like break it down.
Yeah.
The ways that cities pollute, the way that they emit, you know, greenhouse gases are the electricity they use if it's not clean.
Yeah. So buildings. Buildings are a huge source of carbon emissions.
And that's because in the building of them or the running of them?
The building of them. So concrete and steel have a high degree of what's known as embodied energy. So mm-hmm. to make concrete, to make steel, you end up with a lot of carbon emissions from that.
Mm-hmm.
The operating of them, the heating and cooling of them, we use a lot of electricity when we occupy buildings and so forth. And so there's a lot of materials in buildings that are carbon emitters. Then of course there's transport, yeah. right? Because even though there's a lot of mass transportation in big cities, there's also a lot of private cars right. and congestion. Things like Uber were supposed to help. They actually ended up causing more traffic congestion, not yeah. less. And so we still have a ton of problems to solve. But what I'm hopeful about is, it's like what we said at the opening, if a mayor and his or her constituents, like take Paris, for example, what Mayor Anne Hidalgo has been doing, you know, she's turning that into basically a car-free city.
Right.
And there's a lot of controversy around it. But the thing is, she's greening that whole city. She's greening buildings. She's building more parks. And when cities start to do that and other cities catch on, you're now talking about change that's happening at the scale of millions, if not billions of people. Right. And so it's interesting. The mayors are talking to each other more and more. Like when Trump pulled out of the Paris Agreement, the mayors of most American cities believed in the Paris Agreement. And so they kept going with their fellow mayors, greening their cities and so forth. And that's actually where most people live. And so that's why it's so important. You can really design cities to be much more carbon neutral. And tomorrow I'm going to be talking about how to make them carbon negative.
Right. Wow. And this is where, that's what I was going to say, right? This is where you come in as the architect. You are the person that then is designing the cities that people are living in. And you keep using this phrase, which is greening our cities and greening buildings.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not sure that I understand what that means. Like when you say that, the image that I have is like putting plants on the outside of a house, right?
It's less about plants, although nature and plants certainly play a role. And we've heard a lot about that at this conference about how, you know, trees especially are carbon sinks and so forth. But when we talk about that, what we really mean by greening cities, it's cleaning up things like the electrical grid, mm-hmm. right? So every major city in the world is trying to figure out how can it get its huge amount of energy demand supplied by wind and solar,
right.
geothermal, even nuclear in some cases. Because like, take an electric car. An electric car is only as clean as what it plugs into, right? And that's a huge effort underway in most cities to figure out how to clean up the grid. Mm-hmm. So what we're trying to do at the building scale is, in anticipation of the grid becoming cleaner, making buildings as electric as possible. So they're not running on fuel oil or natural gas, but trying to run off the electrical grid so that if we clean the grid, we clean all buildings at the same time.
Right.
Right. So that's what it generally means. But there is an aspect of the plants and the nature bit. People need to see greenery. I'm not denying that.
Right.
So urban parks are really important, mm-hmm. great public spaces. And especially in low-income communities that have seen like the worst brunt of climate change.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what, you know, you can go to most of our wealthy cities and they'll have beautiful parks in the rich areas
right.
and really, really scrappy parks in the poor areas.
Yeah.
Things like that need to change as part of greening our cities. So it's a whole menu of stuff we need to do.
There's something you said earlier that I love. You've been talking about cities as communal.
Yeah.
And as someone who loves cities, I love cities. I'm a city person. I like, that is my thing. You know, I'm most comfortable at home in a city. I feel like one of the really big misconceptions is that when you live in a city, you live there because you want to be isolated and individual and like just...
And people are mean to each other.
And yeah. I find it much more isolating, the idea of being very rural or having spent like my teenage years in a suburb.
Yeah.
I find that much more isolating than being in a city. And I really like that perspective. Do you find that's unusual? Like, I feel like you're the first person I'm hearing talking about the community of cities.
I totally agree that we need to talk about that aspect more. Look, you could take a number of issues. Look at the vaccination statistics, and you'll find that in most cities, people are far more willing to get vaccinated. And I think part of that has to do is with when you live in a city, you're used to living in a collective. You're used to sharing things. You share transit. You share parks.
Yes.
You know, my kids grew up in New York City. So they're used to the idea that the sidewalk is a shared space.
Yeah.
And so you got to think about your neighbor in a different kind of way than the house with the gate around it and the car that's a completely insulated bubble. And I know like a lot of people really like those things, but you know, what we did in most of the Western economies through, like especially after World War II, when this whole machinery built up to build cars and highways and stuff, is we made it super cheap for people to live in the suburbs. And it actually turned out to be quite expensive to live in cities. Mm-hmm. And we're still trying to undo that mess that we created, especially in the United States. So there's the Federal Highway Act. And so, you know, an enormous, you know, in today's dollars, billions and billions, if not trillions of dollars were spent on building highways, and people assume that roads should be free. But when you talk about building something communal, like a mass transit system, well, why is that so expensive? But no one thinks about those, you know, together and says, well, a mass transit system can move people, far more people, much more quickly, much more efficiently than a highway system can.
Right.
Of course, obviously, very much more greenly.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's a mindset that I think, and I really look to young people because I think young people are much more interested in that shared sense of civilization than maybe older generations.
You know, I moved to New York when I was 13 with my family. And when we were there for the first, in the suburbs, and from London. And we didn't have a car for the first few weeks, but school was starting. And we had to go like buy clothes and we would take the bus. And people just could not understand what on earth we were doing. Like how, you know, we're in Long Island, New York. How on earth could you take the bus? And over the five years I lived there, that was the last time I took the bus ever.
Really?
Once we got a car, once you went into the city, you took the subway and you took the train to the city and all that kind of stuff. But in the suburbs, in the areas outside, it was inconceivable that you would take public transport. Yeah.
So there's a very visionary mayor of Bogota, Colombia, who said, you know, a developed country isn't a place where poor people use cars. It's a place where rich people use transit.
Wow.
Yes. Yes, so true, because you just, it is a different, it is like when you, that's one of the things I love about cities. And we talked about this the other day, we were talking to a person working on a car campaign, and I was like, I love cars, but I don't have a license because I've lived in cities.
I don't need to drive.
I've got this incredible public transport system. I want to find out a bit from you about the ways in which you're greening cities, the vision you have for what cities could be and the role they could play, and how your work as an architect plays into that.
Well, at the architectural scale, like we're working on one major project that's known as Passive House, which is a kind of net zero environment. So if you want to think of it, it's like a circular building. Anything mm-hmm. that goes in comes out, you know. And so it's supposed to be kind of carbon neutral, basically.
I still find it crazy that things like that are possible. Like like gas and stuff is so hardwired into my brain that like the idea that you could actually create a whole house that doesn't pollute.
The thing is, a lot of it has to do with the fact that solar and wind are much, much more affordable than they used to be. Solar is a really good technology in sunny climates. Mm-hmm. And it's quite effective. And now there are battery systems that can hold the power when it's not sunny out. And like, so there's a lot. So there's that kind of scale of thing where you can think about green buildings, if you were, right? That's what they're generally called. But then you got to think about the larger systems. Like, even if it's a green building, if you have to drive to it, it kind of defeats the point. So how do the transit systems work? How about walking and biking? And, you know, I worked in the Bloomberg administration after 9/11, and we had this kind of guerrilla transportation commissioner, Jeanette Sadiq Khan, and we all thought she was crazy because she was walking around talking about people biking all over the city. And we're like, biking in New York City? It's like a death wish. Yeah. I bike everywhere in New York City.
Do you?
Like, there's a shared bike system. I'm a 55-year-old man. I bike everywhere in New York City, and I love it. I love it. It's a totally different, completely freeing experience. Now,
that's the thing about biking, isn't it? Like, it's actually much more fun. Oh, it's like so enjoyable, but it's just also like,
but you need like protected bike lanes and stuff like that. And look, obviously, people in a wheelchair, people who are older, can't do that, and so you need a really good express bus system, and you need a good metro system. But my point is just like, I think it's really important to not talk about the demands on us in terms of climate change and like what we have to do to address climate change as all of this eat your spinach, your life is going to be horrible. You're never going to be able to enjoy anything anymore. Yeah. We're never going to win this fight if we think that way.
Right.
It has to be about the fact that you could actually live a better life, a more fit life, a more enjoyable life. You can have more time with your friends and family because you're not stuck in traffic for 2 hours. Like, it's those lifestyle things that I think like our entire climate community needs to get across more.
I couldn't even agree more actually about that. I think there are so many cool things we can do.
Yeah.
And there's so much out there. And there has to be a payoff for doing the difficult things too.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I'm really learning at this conference, in addition to the idea that you could live a better life, there's obviously a real economic agenda that's part of climate change now that I think is really important for people to believe in and understand.
Yeah. And that's an important question, right? Is how do we engage the people with the power to change the things, right? Like the people who have the money to invest, the people who build the businesses that do the things, how do we convince those people to stop doing the things that are bad and to start doing the things that are good? But like you say, like there is incentive to do it, right? Because it's better for everyone. It's better for you. And especially that framing of like, you can live a happier, healthier life. You can
have more fun, things
you love to do, right? See your family, spend more time chilling with people, go wherever you want, cycle everywhere you want in the city. That's fine. That sounds like a future I'd love to live in. And I always find it hard. One of the things, especially when we started doing this, so we're 3 seasons in now. Mm-hmm. And when we started doing this, I remember in the first episode thinking, I'm not sure I want to live in a world where like everything is climate friendly and like we've solved the problem, because it doesn't sound very fun. But actually, the more we speak to people is the more I think, oh no, that sounds great. Like that's, that sounds like a city I'd want to live in,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Good. That's important. It's super important.
Right. So Mariam, I've been thinking, how did we start this podcast?
That's a great question. So at TEDx London, we're all about ideas worth spreading. We've explored everything from gender and borders to technology and design at our events. We've been doing this for 5 years. And in that journey, Citi has been our headline partner, and they've been with us every step of the way. But when it came to the climate crisis, we needed a new format. We wanted to break out of the red circle, to speak directly to the climate leaders, to ask questions and to be curious. And as always, Citi was there with us, supporting our vision, encouraging us to be courageous and adventurous with our ideas. So thank you, Citi, for making this podcast and all of our work possible. For the love of ideas, for the love of curiosity, for the love of progress. Citi. Now back to the show. Yeah, I mean, I think part of it actually, so the reason that we decided to take this focus on cities, and it's so cool to talk to you because you're like one of our first guests who's there trying to create more joyous cities, right? Like, you know, everything else has been a component of that and you're looking at it as a whole, is this idea that it's not about stripping everything away and making it bland and making everything homogenous and taking out. One of the things that's great about New York, about London, is the diversity.
Yeah.
Right? And that means that we don't want to make everything the same by making things green.
Right.
Right?
No, absolutely not. And that's why it's so important that people of color are deeply involved in this conversation. Because, you know, like, so you can't kind of swing a cat without talking to like a climate urbanist who doesn't bring up Copenhagen. And like, Copenhagen's great, but you know, it's not New York or London. And so it is really, really important to talk about this diversity issue because it's one of the things that I think attracted a lot of us to cities in the first place.
Right. Yes.
You know, it's funny, I've traveled all over the United States and it's amazing. People, they see brown skin and like one of the first things they ask you is like, where are you from?
Huh? Yeah.
Right? And
in New York, everyone's like,
no one asks you where you're from. Yeah.
No, because you're a New Yorker.
Right.
They assume you're from down the road,
and
right?
Actually, they're just much more concerned with where you're going.
Yeah.
Right? Right? And so it's just this completely different mindset.
Yes. I you know what? Like I had the same observation because I love London. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I love London is because you can be in London for 5 minutes or like 50 years and you're a Londoner, right? If you say you're a Londoner, it's like what I love about it.
Yeah.
And not everyone, a good portion of people I knew who had the privilege to be able to choose where they live during the pandemic were like, I'm out. And what did I do with my partner? We were like, how can we go further in?
Yeah.
Because we actually realized that we wanted to be more in the city because
more delivery options.
No.
Yeah.
You laugh. But like, it is true. I think it did put in relief it made me realize that what I get from London isn't just the stuff that happens in London and isn't just the people that are in London, although those two things are like obviously super important. It's the city. It's the thing that is bigger than the sum of its parts that exists there that I love. And I do think that it would, like if we could pay attention to the people who want to nurture this incredible places they are, if they are like, because we've been talking a lot about the West, like the rest of the world is also urbanizing, right? And there's loads of opportunities there to cultivate really joyous cities.
And you know, one of the things I found, like, so, you know, they, like in the global South, we're seeing massive urbanization. I mean, a city like Mumbai is estimated to gain about 2,000 people a day in population. And a lot of those people are villagers who are coming for economic opportunities in the city. And they live under very tough working conditions. It's nothing to romanticize. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I go to cities all over the place and I find that there's a youth movement in cities, rich cities, poor cities. Right before the pandemic, I was in Santiago where there were huge protests about raising the mass transit fares. And like I got asked about it and I said, why is there a mass transit fare? You know, mass transit should be free.
Right.
Right. Just charge the drivers a ton
I love
of money.
This. Why has no one ever said, well, I'm sure you've been saying it forever, but I've never heard this. Mm. Yeah. Why are roads free and public transport.
Right.
I mean, that doesn't make any sense.
Of course, it's super expensive to build and operate mass transit. I get that. But it's also super expensive to build and operate roads. But for some reason, we think roads should just be free.
Yeah.
And it's nonsense. You know, and so like, and that's why look, London and Stockholm and other cities are doing congestion pricing and all of that stuff. But I really do find a tremendous youth movement in most cities today. And that gives me a lot of hope because I think young people aren't just going to cities to have fun and go clubbing and all of that. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but but that they're also there to build their communities and fight for the things they believe in terms of especially climate justice.
Yeah. I mean, it comes around to that sense of having a community in the city.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really like this idea that like quality of life doesn't have to be something that you have to move away for.
Yes.
Right? Like I think that's something that like especially my generation has always grown up with, being in London in particular. All of my friends, as soon as they have their first kid, are like, it's time to go. We need to get out of here. We don't want to raise our kids in the city, like pollution, blah, 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 blah. Moving to the countryside or as far out as I can get and I'll just commute in for work. And I think people think they can get bigger houses, nicer spaces. It's not a problem because I can just drive. And that idea like of I've never made that connection of like driving into the city maybe not being the best thing for people to do. But also like this idea now of like, well, your quality of life can be as good or better in the city if we start to change it and we start to green everything is a really nice.
And by the way, I mean, we've spoken about like young people a lot, but like I said, we raised both of our kids in New York City. They love it.
Yeah.
Right. New York City is actually a great, we plan to grow old there because it's a great place to walk around and there's culture and there's, you know, like you said, you don't feel isolated, which is really, I think, important for older people. And so it's, you know, you can make it work for every generation, you know, and I actually think cities are a great place for kids because they see diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they learn to share space. As opposed to thinking their backyard is their own.
Yeah. It's like not being an only child, right? It's like growing up with siblings.
I'm an only child and I shared because I don't want to be lonely. You talk to those oldest children if you want that behavior.
I'm the baby.
Yeah.
I'm the baby
I love
too.
Being a sibling.
I really think we can make cities work for everyone, but the design of them is really, really important.
How do we get to this? How do we get to this vision of this amazing, green, healthy city?
I'm really interested in our existing cities.
Right.
Right. You know, and not just New York and London. We're designing buildings in a lot of like the post-industrial rust belt in the United States.
Yeah.
You know, we're designing the expansion of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland. Mm. And we're designing a bridge in Indianapolis. And a lot of it is what I think of as kind of acupuncture. And because sometimes like a small move can make a really big difference. Like I was part of a small group of people that helped save the High Line in New York. And, you know, when we were working on the High Line.
Thank you.
Right? Everyone said we were crazy. You know, this is a 1.5 mile elevated rail structure in Lower Manhattan. And you know, a whole group of us were fighting to turn it into a park. And everyone said we were crazy, that like they'd have security problems and people would get killed up there. No one was going to go up there. The year before the pandemic, it had 6.5 million visitors.
Wow.
It gets more visitation than the Statue of Liberty. In fact, its biggest problem is overcrowding.
I mean, can I just tell you, it is one of the most magical places I have ever been to, ever in any place, is the New York High Line. It's just, you're just like, why does this not exist everywhere?
I've not been there. Why have I not been there?
Oh, you
Ben,
gonna,
you gotta go, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly like magic.
What I mean, it is, and a good friend of mine calls it, she calls it a magic carpet ride, and it does feel like that. But I think so much of it is, and I've heard actually that people are trying to like replicate High Lines in places where there is no elevated structure. Part of the magic of it is it was an old industrial artifact that, you know, kind of got saved and got turned into something else. And that's what I mean about working with existing cities.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just about like designing the new thing with bells and whistles. Sometimes that's important, but sometimes it's about like preserving something, having it restored into some other completely different kind of use. I mean, the embodied energy that's in cities, all the energy that went into building what's there already, how do you really optimize the use of that for people?
The instead parks, of just scrapping it and starting again.
Exactly. The parks. I mean, you know, I mean, you should remember that in the 70s, people had like almost given up on our cities.
Yeah.
Right? And we had major parks in New York and all around the world that were like drug dens and closed off. And everyone was like, you know, this is like, these are never coming back. And now, like, most of them suffer from overuse. Like, that's the biggest problem with them. And so there's so much to do. To me, the big challenge, and again, it's something I'm going to talk about tomorrow, is we have enormous housing demand in our cities. Our cities have become very, very expensive, especially like the New Yorks and the Londons and the San Franciscos. How do we build more affordable and, again, carbon negative housing? Like, how could we achieve that?
Yeah.
And I think, so there's a lot to do,
yeah,
right? But I do think because of that sense of community, there's enough people who want to do it that we can get it done.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's such a beautifully optimistic. I feel like we've written a love letter to our cities in this episode.
It was. Do you know, at the beginning when you said you write about cities, I was like, what is there to write about cities? Who would want to read about a city? And now I'm like, I might buy one of those books. I really enjoyed this conversation. That was so brilliant. Nice.
If you don't mind, we have one last thing we'd like to ask from you. We're going to have our final segment. Ben, what's it called?
So Climate Confessions is the part of the show where we invite you to share with us maybe something that you might be doing that is not carbon negative.
And look, I think it's a really important question because I think the people who are climate skeptics or whatever think that we're all a bunch of holier than thou people. And I don't think most of us are.
Right.
And so I think it's great. The one that I think is the one that surprises people the most, because I'm part of this whole effort to try to get private cars out of cities. I love to drive old cars. I drive like an Indian cab driver.
Oh, I
like
love it. Right? Love it.
So, but what I do, the way I channel that is I never drive or very, very rarely drive in cities. What I do, like, so I just drove cross country with my son, right?
And, like the most extreme alternative.
Right, exactly. So you know what an Airstream is?
Yes.
Right? So we pulled a 25-foot-long Airstream
cross country.
Epic. Right? Totally epic. And we did it with the only, like the most environmentally friendly car I could find that could pull an Airstream, which was, believe it or not, a Porsche hybrid.
Wow.
And yeah. Like we got a lot of looks from angry Americans about the fact that I wasn't pulling it with a big Ford pickup truck. But like, you know, and so sure, of course we had a carbon footprint from that trip.
Right.
But we're not doing that every day. You know, it's just, you know, I do think that the counterpart of believing in cities is having a lot less sprawl so that we can go out into nature, and we need to be able to do that. And hopefully over time we can do that in more sustainable ways. But
I love that you shared that with us. Yeah. Thank you so much.
I thought you were going to say you were part of a biker gang or something. No. I was like, no, you did something
so
really bad.
I wish I was that cool,
could you imagine,
man.
The architect's biker gang. Yeah. That would be amazing. Thank you so much for spending this time with us. Good luck tomorrow. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us this week. We really hope you enjoyed this episode.
If you did, please rate, subscribe, and share this episode with a curious friend. It makes us possible to keep making this amazing content for you.
Oh, and slide into our DMs at TEDx London and let us know which climate extraordinaires you'd love to hear from next time. Oh, and don't leave yet. We wanted to tell you a bit more about who made this podcast possible.
Yeah, we did. TEDx London's headline partner, City, has been supporting us for the past 5 years to bring world-changing ideas to the TEDx London stage. And now they're taking it to the next level by making this podcast possible. Thanks, City.
But wait, that is not all.
No, this podcast was produced by the amazing Josie Coulter.
Curation and research by the genius Tara Cooper.
Artwork designed by the visionaries that are Sabrina Russo and Rebecca Mingus.
Mixed and engineered by the iconic Ben Beheshti, aka The Falcon, who also composed our banging theme tune.
Presented by me, Mariam Pasha.
And by me, Ben Hurst. Stay curious.